Ball on the 6-yard line. First and goal. Bison's up 15-3. Atelier calls up the signals. He's going to look to his right, throw quickly.
They're
picked
big.
Up! And this one's coming back! And this one could be a long gainer. Back to the 35-40. All the way down is Danny Nesbitt. Nesbitt trying to stiff arm a tackler. He's finally dragged down to the 39 of the Bisons by Dylan Trotter. It was a touchdown as he stepped in front of that quick pass. And the Rams defense comes up big. What a play by the stud linebacker Danny Nesbitt.
I loved it.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is brought to you by our friends at Riviere Ag Seeds, Southern Saskatchewan's premium certified seed grower, delivering homegrown certified durum, yellow peas, and chickpeas. By Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan, thanks to David Dubé and the Concord Group of Companies for getting on board. For takeout or delivery, check out Pizza Huts. You can even go into their restaurants, social distancing, so that's great news this weekend. Check them out in person. It's always nice to get that ambiance. Also, Boys Next Door Window Cleaning. If you want to hire Landon and Nathan, and see what kind of work they do, check out their outstanding new website at theboysnextdoor.ca. Speaking of hiring, you want to get in some grad photos or something, or for your commercial business, commercial photography too, markgreshner.com. Also want to give a shout out to Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn with my buddy Corey Zadorozniak for grain hauling, grain marketing, and crop insurance. Give Corey a call out there. Double Z Ag Sales are there for you. Also want to tell you about Paul Waldo at Royal LePage in Regina. Get in the real estate game with Paul, the three-time Grey Cup champ, by giving him a call, 306-502-5355. And SAS Selects Football and our buddy Zelko Stefanovic out there at the R Center, building the stars of tomorrow, today running a highly successful football program. Last week, a racehorse named Dr. Fauci made his debut at Belmont Park. In fact, because of the coronavirus, many owners are giving their racehorses names related to the pandemic. So how did Dr. Fauci do in his race? Here's the call.
They're coming around the final bend, and Flatten the Curve has a big lead on Herd Immunity. Quarantine is in third, followed by Dr. Fauci and Hydroxychloroquine. Way in the back is Bath Soup, who is faltering as the entire pack leaves him behind. And they're in the home stretch. 50 yards to go, and Dr. Fauci is charging fast on the outside. Here comes Quarantine, pulling up past Herd Immunity. Dr. Fauci and Quarantine, neck and neck, coming on strong. But it's not enough, as Flatten the Curve crosses the finish line with a solid 6-foot lead. Dr. Fauci takes second by a nose. Quarantine in third. Coming in fourth, Hydroxychloroquine, followed by Don't Sneeze on Me in fifth place. Tonight's Corona Derby has been brought to you by the Vaccine Makers of America, who remind you, hold your horses. We're working on it.
And this is Growing the Game with Ballsy, and I'm very pleased to be joined by the athletic director over at the University of Regina, Lisa Robertson. And I was promoting I was going to have you on earlier, Lisa, but unfortunately in your household we had a little bit of a flu situation, so that obviously comes first. And I think in the past when we used to hear things like flu or sickness, we'd kind of slough it off. It's definitely a new world, isn't it, Lisa?
Yeah, and just to be clear, not a flu situation, yeah. Totally unrelated to flu situation in our house. But I think everyone is highly attuned to health these days, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so what led the Can West at large to pull the pin on a 5-game season? And we're talking football here. I know you've got other sports to worry about, but this podcast primarily focuses on sports, or on football, pardon me. So I'm looking at it, and when Can West first came out with a 5-game proposal, I was really excited, and I thought, you know what, I was skeptical it would get pulled off, but I thought, you know, good on Can West for coming out and trying to lead the charge. What led you to the decision to pull the pin at large?
Yeah, so I think, with everything these days, and specifically around COVID-19, is things are changing very quickly, and information available is growing, and And I think the experts are learning more and more. So, yeah, we came out with a five-game schedule in hopes that our provinces, our four provinces, would be further along in their reopening, as well as we would have more information in regards to safety measures that we could potentially take to be able to execute a five-game season. So we needed to do that early because budgeting happens in our most of our schools anyways in the spring. So it's important that we have at least four mats so that we understand, okay, well, what's it going to cost to do these seasons? So a five-game schedule came out. At the same time, again, lots of work happening at multiple levels, both within the institutions and within the provincial authorities, the four provincial authorities. We, Canada West, launched a COVID task force to dive deeper into exactly what the risk assessments would be around delivering sport, and specific to your questions around delivering football. So we ran our sports through a risk assessment tool that was developed by the Canadian Academy of Sport and Exercise Medicine. Then our committee, which had sport medicine, sport med doctor, a sport scientist, an athletics, a senior athletic therapist in Canada West, and several athletic directors, then took a dive into multiple areas of the delivery of sport. And at the end of the day, their recommendation was that it would not be in the health interests of our student athletes, our coaches, and our communities to try and deliver football this fall.
Lisa, this is a question that I'm not going to hide from, because it's a question I brought up in my podcast that I would ask you, because it's on my mind, and it's on a lot of parents' mind that listen to the podcast that have reached out to me. I get it has to do with health, but from an outsider that isn't involved in your task force that you guys talked about, I look at the cases right across from Manitoba to BC, and the cases are way better under control now than they've ever been, and in particular here in Regina and in Saskatchewan. So from the outside looking in, it looks like the cases are low. So I guess where I'm going with this is, does it have more to do with money? And I wouldn't say that you should be chastised for that. I think what people want to know, and I'm one of them, does it, I think I said in my podcast, don't pee on me and tell me it's raining. If it's about money, tell me it's about money, because I get it. You guys, and I think in the Can West, what people can appreciate more so than any other conference is your budgets are bigger for travel, for everything like that, more so than the OUA, more so than the Quebec League. I know that from my son's own recruiting process and going through all that. It was a real eye-opener. Can West has bigger budgets. So is this really more about money than it is health at the end of the day?
You know what? Absolutely not. First and foremost, our task force looked at this from a health and safety perspective, and I think you can look at the numbers across the province, and then yeah, absolutely, we're doing better. But why are we doing better? And that's because of social distancing and the rules that have been brought in by the governments, the four provincial governments, around social distancing and around keeping our vulnerable populations at home, or at least within a very small bubble of people. So I don't think you can look at it in isolation. It's not like the cases have dropped because we've carried on life as usual. Mm-hmm. And frankly, you can't social distance in a football game at all. Yeah. And and one of the things that people assume around our demographic of student athletes is that they're a low risk population. That's not true. What we've come up with is from this task force and from doing some statistics is we have between 15% and 17% of our student athletes are within the high risk. They have asthma, they have diabetes, or they have another type of immune disorder that actually puts them at high risk. In addition to that, with football, if you put a significant number of our football players on a BMI scale, they're actually going to come out as obese. Not to say they're not healthy and they're not fit, but the reality is there's different body types that play football. And what we know is that people who are in the category of obese have a higher risk. So first and foremost, we looked at this from the health perspective and the reality of what we're dealing with. And I think, you know, if you just look at it at the high level, like I said, you could make the assumptions that, you know, we're safe to go back to life as normal.
Yeah. Okay. So Lisa, go ahead.
I just want to get to your finance part.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely, we have to look at finance. But yes, Canada West is the most expensive league to run, but OUA has also made the same decision as has AUS, which have significantly less budgets. You know, we've all taken hits across the country financially, but from U of R's perspective, we have a very, very dedicated senior administration, and we would, and all of the universities in Canada West, were looking to provide sport under whatever conditions we could provide it. So finance is always part of it, Michael, absolutely. But first and foremost, this was a health and safety decision.
I want to get on, and thank you for being upfront. And it looks like, Lisa, you've, and I'm not suggesting in the past you weren't, but it's good to ask you the questions and hear that you guys are looking deep into this thing. So it's not an easy decision or a decision taken lightly. I want to get to some of the other team-related stuff, but I do want to ask you this: what if we don't have a vaccine in time for next season or down the line? I mean, let's be honest here, and this is the part I struggle with. This is the part I really struggle with, and I don't want to get into it too much, but I've said it right here in this space. We seem to be in society, be picking and choosing where we can get this disease. I can go here and do something, but I can't go to my church. I can go shop here, but I can't go do this. I can do this, but I can't go do that. And there seems to be mixed messages. And I'm not saying that that's, you guys have come out definitely and said, we're not doing this. Okay. And you've just, you know, put the example out there for us. So I get it. But what if we don't have a vaccine? Are you concerned as somebody leading an athletic department that, like, where do we go with sports? Because we don't have an AIDS vaccine. We never got a Zika virus vaccine. We may never get a vaccine here. Has that discussion been done?
Well, of course, we've had those discussions. And personally, I've thought a lot about that. I mean, sport is my life and it's my passion. And I've chosen to make a career of it. So absolutely, I've thought of that. But right now, I can't and I don't want to encourage our student athletes or our coaches to live in the what ifs. Right now, we need to deal with what we know and what we have in front of us, and we will attack the next piece as it comes to us. If there is no vaccine, we're going to have to look at things in a very different way. How that will affect sport, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't. But you're right, there might not be a vaccine. And when we have a sense of what that looks like, we will attack that with the same passion and the same energy that we're attacking, addressing, getting our students right back on campus right now. We're trying to get our student athletes on campus to train, both, you know, do some sports-specific training, socially distanced, obviously, as well as getting them in the weight room under the rules that our province has allowed. So my job and the job of our coaches is to look out for the best interests of these student athletes and get them back to sport, because sport is critical in our society. So these are questions to come, Michael, and they're definitely questions that I have on my mind, and I'm sure anybody in sport right now has on their mind.
So speaking of questions on our minds, I'm going to rattle off a few. You give me what you can give me. I know it's very fluid, so we'll do the best we can. Will scholarships be honored? Specifically, we're talking football here. I'm talking to a U of R person here. So will the Rams scholarships be honored? Because there's a lot of people wondering about that.
Yeah, the university will honor the scholarships that they fund for the Rams. So our university has said they will honor all of our student athletes' commitments for this coming season. So, we're in a good situation there. We're student athlete first, student focused. So that is a commitment we have made.
Livelihoods everywhere, coaches' jobs. I know at the U of A, they kind of rinse their assistant coaches. They've kept their head coaches around. What about coaching jobs, not only with the Rams, but across the board with your other, at least first-term teams?
Yeah, no, I have no concerns with our coaches' job security. And we've had those conversations with our coaches, and we will We're committed to sport. I'm committed to sport. Mm-hmm. So I'm not concerned, and they should have no concerns.
Okay, let's talk about age amnesty, because that would be a big thing. Mm-hmm. I know there's 5 on the Rams, 5 on the Huskies, the 2 university teams in this province. Has that been discussed? Well, it has been discussed, probably. Where does that stand? So say we do come back. We're fortunate to come back next year. The 5 Rams, maybe would it be left out? Could we find a way where we could leave it up to them? Maybe 2 guys say, hey, you know what? I'm good. I'm done. 3 other guys want to play another year. Would they be afforded that extra year?
So we don't know that yet. So we actually have 6 guys that are going to get caught up in this fifth year age cap. We have 8 fourth years, actually, who would then be subsequently affected in the following season. So these right now, Canada West, we do, again, I don't know how the other conferences make their decisions and how they, how they advocate for their student athletes. But this is a U sport level decision. It's not a conference decision. So we're in the midst of actually surveying, getting feedback from all our football schools on age cap, how many student athletes are going to get caught up in this across our football schools to advocate for a relaxation of the age cap rule. It's complicated on so many levels because you're almost going to now triple up. You're doubling up a recruiting year, first of all.
Right.
And now, on top of that, you've added, there's no attrition through age cap. So, it seems super straightforward, but I've heard that there are coaches across the country, some coaches in other areas, and I'm not even sure how all the Canada West coaches feel, but I do know that there are some coaches in other conferences that actually aren't in favor of relaxing the age cap. So we're advocating for it in Canada West, and that decision will be made by our board of directors at U Sport. So,
Well, I'm asking you these questions, Lisa, in part not expecting you to have the answers yet, but what I wanted to do here is ask you the questions and highlight all the hurdles that you need to go through, because it's like running a hurdle race. You get over 1 or 2 hurdles, you see the finish line, but you got 7 more to jump over before you get there. So I kind of wanted to paint a picture what the administration has to deal with here too, okay? Here's another one. I've used Kyle Borsa as a poster child for this, the Rams outstanding running back. A guy by his own doing, unfortunately, had a miss last year, okay? Whether I agreed with him having a sit out or not is another story. But anyways, he was suspended, but he comes back. He's ready to go. He's been working out hard. He's finally with his teammates, and now this happens, and he can't play. But I'm thinking this is a guy in his draft year that wants to have a chance at pro football. Would players be free to go elsewhere, like junior football, or maybe try down in the States, and how would that affect their eligibility? Let's be specific with junior football. If say, Kyle Borsa wanted to play junior football, if they decided to go ahead with it, would the university, would the team have any problems with him trying to do that, and how would that affect scholarships and everything like that going forward?
Well, we don't have we don't have all of the answers to those questions. It will affect his age cap. Again, we don't know what that's going to look like. Our university currently has a committee, coach-led committee, on our COVID student athlete AFA, which is their scholarship, AFA agreements will look like.
Right.
Some schools have said that you have to actually be in the city training on campus with your team to get your scholarship. I've heard that. Some are not going that strict. We haven't put in our new rules that a student athlete would have to adhere to in order to be eligible for their AFA. A coach-led committee got Steve Burrows is chairing that committee. It's got several coaches on it. It's got somebody from our student awards office. It's got our compliance and eligibility officer on it. So those questions are being worked on right now so that we can try and get answers to our student athletes as quickly as possible. And then in terms of junior football, again, we don't know that. That's a question that has actually been sent up to U Sport as well. So
I think we're waiting to see if junior, they're supposed to make a decision by early August. So we're waiting to see what their decision is going to be, if they're going to play, and then go down that road if you have to, right?
Yeah, I mean, but it doesn't mean you've got your point around going down to the U.S.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they would have to be eligible in the U.S. to play.
Yeah.
And then come back and repatriate. So there's a whole bunch of complexities to this that U Sport is well aware of, and they are tackling each of these as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and you mentioned something that I was going to bring up, which is really interesting. So you've got this year's grade 12s, okay, recruiting class that were supposed to, a lot of my son's friends excited to go to the Rams or the Huskies or in some cases the Dinos, and now they can't, so they're not going to play for that team, those teams this year. And then you've got the guys coming up this year in grade 12 who looks like they probably won't have a season, and I'm just sick to my stomach for them trying to find a team without the tape and that type of stuff. Hopefully maybe we can do something in the spring, who knows. But you're going to have two recruiting classes that haven't stepped on a field for a football team. Like, how big can the roster sizes be? How much can we offer in scholarship dollars? It is a big headache that way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And even expanding the roster size doesn't really accomplish what ultimately you'd be doing, which is trying to get people on the field to play. So, it's complex. You're right. We're going to have two recruiting classes. And then potentially, if the age cap rule is changed, you're going to have those fifth years. You're going to have a whole, basically, generation, I would assume, of guys who will have an extra year to play because of this situation. So it's interesting. I don't know I've thought about what it may mean to the game, but it's yet to be seen, actually. And I feel terrible. My children play school sports as well, and it's so hard for them. And these kids coming out this year looking forward to, going to university and playing for a Canada West team, I feel so awful for these student athletes. I really, really, really do.
Do you get sleepless thinking about, the future of some teams? Like, I've talked to the Rams personally. They have enough money put aside that they can make it through this year. But next year, because the Rams rely on raising a lot of their own funds, a big one is the 50-50. If there's no football season, I mean, where does that leave the Rams? I know the U of A, I've heard they are kind of, I don't know about our football team, but I'm just talking teams in general. How concerned are you about the fact that we could lose some teams going forward? We don't know that, but, I mean, it's an uncertain world right now.
It's absolutely an uncertain world. I would go back to the no vaccine, my stand on the no vaccine. I try not to get myself too far down that rabbit hole. Otherwise, I can't focus on what needs to happen right now and doing what's best for the student athletes now. But, with anything right now in this world, things may look different in a year from now. Hopefully they look different, but we still have sports strong and healthy.
So let me ask you this. What does go into, as much as you can tell me, what does go into deciding on which teams stay or go? Like, how do you, like, you look at the University of Lethbridge. They decided, and I'm not asking you to speak on their behalf, but University of Lethbridge got rid of two hockey teams. They got rid of that right at the start of the pandemic. What goes into picking which teams are going to be viable and which teams aren't viable?
I think we've gone down this conversation a couple of years ago, and there's a lot that goes into it. It's not done at a surface level. There's a very deep dive into multiple areas, and for the U of R, I'm not concerned about that. I think we're in a in terms of our institution's financial situation is not the same as all the other schools across the conference or out east or whatever. So, I'm in a very positive mind frame about that.
Yeah.
So.
How do we make sports bigger? How do we make people care more about sports? Okay, I'll just paint my own picture here. Okay, and I'm not. It's apples and oranges. I get it. They have a lot of alumni funding down there, and where I'm going with this is North Dakota. My son goes 8 hours across the border to Grand Forks, a city of 90,000. It's a college town. I realize they're not competing with an entity called the Riders, but how do we make it? How do we make it bigger than life? Like, I even look at your university, Lisa, and I'm not pinning this just on the university. I'm giving the Rams some of the blame, too. You guys have had five players play in the National Football League. Everybody considers the NFL the biggest thing going. So, in North American sports, How do we promote that? Like, that is in little old Regina, Saskatchewan, on that campus. We've had five guys. We got two guys right now playing in the NFL, Brett Jones and Akeem Hicks. Now, Akeem was an American that found refuge here because of Frank and played here. But how do we promote that? How do we make people want to get into our game? Because Lisa Robertson can have the greatest hamburger shop. But if nobody knows that Lisa Robertson is the greatest hamburger shop, they'll go to McDonald's. We got to promote that Lisa Robertson has a great hamburger shop. How do we do that?
Well, we could get into a long, long conversation about this. And some of it, in my opinion, well, first of all, I want to clear up with the NCAA. There are more schools in the NCAA that run more like eSport in terms of they are a cost on the institution as opposed to a revenue generator. Mm-hmm. There's some large schools in the U.S. that absolutely are revenue generators, but they're the exception, not the rule. So most of the schools in the U.S. run a similar model in that fundraising is critical, as well as funds from the institution are critical, and they run deficit budgets. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, if you want to get into a I've got two opinions on that, a sociological mm-hmm. debate on how the U.S. was founded and that created this sense of patriotism in the United States, which may or may not be healthy. And the way Canadians, are a little bit more, I don't want to say, we're more humble people in some ways. We don't like to brag. And I also think Canadians take a more balanced approach and a balanced look. We don't get too far down one side of, we don't get too passionate about one thing or another. Mm. I also, though, think that we are don't do ourselves any favors, frankly. I think we're highly critical of our sporting organizations, of our sport leaders, not just at the university level, but in sport in the pros, I don't want to blame the media, but bad news sells. And I think we focus a lot on that. And I think people the word of our media and social media, and that sours them. So I don't think as a whole, we don't do a good job of promoting ourselves, but I also think that we also are highly critical. We look for the bad news, and that seems to catch people's attention, as opposed to all the incredible things that are happening that may draw people in. So, it's a complicated issue, and we have great sport. We have great coaches. U-Sport hockey is probably the second best hockey you can see in this country next to the NHL. But you're right, we don't do a good job of promoting it, and I also think we're too critical when we should be looking past some of the missteps I look at the Riders coming to Saskatchewan from Alberta, I'm like, holy doodles, that's got to be the hardest team to be a sport administrator on as well as a coach, because you love them or you hate them. Mm-hmm. And I think I don't think we do ourselves a favor, and I don't think we do our sport a favor by being like that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I agree sometimes we can be too passionate one way or the other, but I just look at a Noah Pickton, for instance, okay, since this is a football podcast. Mm-hmm. And I realize, especially now, budgets are going to be tighter, but there's got to be a way, either at the RAM level or in conjunction with the university, where we have and I'm just using him as an example. We had a guy that was the outstanding quarterback, the outstanding player, actually, in university football. We're playing in a new stadium. The Rams are part tenants of that stadium. They're there. They're playing. Why not have a billboard in front of Mosaic Stadium? The Heck Crichton Trophy winner plays here. There's. I get what you're saying. Sometimes you got to balance it. Like, it can't be all about sports and not about the classroom and the student athlete. And I think they forget about that a little bit in the States somewhat. Mm-hmm. So I agree with that. But also, promote yourself. To me, it's ridiculous that we have a Vanier Cup, which is a really great product. Bang for the buck. You know, I talked about Akeem Hicks. I talked about Brett Jones. People will spend $100-$200 to go watch those guys in the States, but they could have watched him here for $20 at Old Mosaic Stadium. You know what I mean? Or the Stars of tomorrow today at New Mosaic Stadium, but they won't go watch. We don't have a Vanier Cup on TV. Like, how does that work? How can't we get a deal where we can have one of the pinnacle of our sport broadcast every year? It boggles my mind.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree that that we have great product. I don't, and you know, and I think some schools do a good job promoting and don't seem to get you know, the residual effect of people in the stands. I think we lack a bit of tradition here that potentially. You know, again, you look down to the States, they have, they've existed a lot longer and have a lot, you know, a lot more behind those institutions and those schools. And it's part of their culture. It's not the same here. It's not part of our culture. And that's okay. Because frankly, there's a lot of upside to Canada, as well, but it doesn't mean we're going to stop promoting and we're going to throw in the white flag. For sure, we're going to keep telling the stories of our student athletes and the great sport we provide.
Well, hopefully we've got more stories to tell here in the near future, and hopefully we'll actually get back to a regular routine that we were used to, or somewhat regular routine, in the not too distant future. Hey, Lisa, thanks for this. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a great day, Michael.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
This has been Growing the Game with Balzi. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Balzi can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.